Wednesday, September 27, Thursday, 2018. And Muscat Oman meeting with teachers. Okay. There it is. And I don't need this.
Mataji, when you speak slowly, so I can also understand. Otherwise, she will translate me. You speak slowly.
I was not speaking slowly before in that room because she could understand me with my normal American speed. I can speak slowly. Is this okay? Like okay, this speed?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure other people also appreciate if I speak slowly.
Yes.
But sometimes I get excited, and then I forget. So just signal me or remind me.
Yes.
Oh, is that okay?
Yes.
But in there, because what is your good name again?
Radha Harini.
Radha Harini. What does Harini mean?
One who steals.
Oh yes, my steals goodness.
Steals of Krishna's heart.
Radha Harini. Is that the stealer of Radha or Radha who's a stealer?
This is Sri Prasa Mataji from Salana.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming to us electronically. I'm wondering. So Radha Harini, you could understand when I speak normal speak. I was wondering, why is this lady looking confused when I was speaking in there? Because I was too fast, yeah?
Yeah.
So what are we doing? What do you want to know? We have 1 hour. We have until 11:20. So I could give you 500 hours of instruction. You have 1 hour. What would you like? You know something about my background? Why you should take your time even to listen to me?
Okay.
This is quite a system of this big speakers for such a small room. What would you like to know?
Madhuri, we want to know how to convey the Krishna's main message, that is the spirit soul message, to the kids. Because we are unable to find those examples up to the kids' level. We face this problem.
This topic specifically or in general with spiritual topics?
As we have started the MAC General Gurukul group now.
Yeah.
There are some shlokas like their matas pashas, Dehino's name. So she is handling children who are in the age group between 8 to 10. So how do we express that about the spirit soul?
What are you trying to do now? How are you trying to teach this now?
We have divided in the session. First we take the invocation prayers, later on we do the shloka. Afterwards we explain, we have the story teaching through the skits, and then we have the physical activity.
What kind of physical activity do you have in relationship to understanding that you are not this body?
Till now we have carried out the rhymes, Krishna's rhymes, 2 to 3.
No specific activity.
That is not a physical activity.
No.
Rhymes is a verbal and maybe musical activity, but it is not a physical activity.
We are thinking.
We have not actually designed any physical activity relating how we can explain spirit soul. Actually, no.
What kind of physical activities do you do in general?
Only play time.
Just a free playtime?
No, organized, like we give, say, a Goloka and Goloka inside and outside. Goloka is inside, Goloka is outside, jumping. And when we stop the telling, then person who is inside or outside is out. So we do this.
According to the syllabus, if there are any activities related to that particular topic, related to that topic only we have.
So you're using Tapasvini syllabus. Are you finding, does she have sections there about how we're not this body? Why are the men sitting up? Are they like not allowed?
Space probably.
Okay, well why not the, look, you can come forward a little bit.
Yeah.
Are you also teachers in the school?
We can hear you, Mother.
Yeah, but you know, for many years in ISKCON, they made the ladies be in the back or in another room. It was at least 15 years that the ladies were treated very badly. And I don't like to see anybody treated. I was treated very badly for a long time. And I don't like to see that. Are you also teachers in the... Are these gentlemen also teachers in the school?
No.
But at least, why don't the ladies come forward a little bit? And then the ladies can move over. And then there is some room for the women. Okay, that's good. What did I just do?
Created equality.
I created equality. Did I talk about it?
No.
Yes, I talked about it a little bit. I talked about it and then I did it. I'm going to. Do you have any kind of flip chart or any board or anything to write on?
On Nathuni, Erasin, and Penny. Thank you.
Sometimes I make funny pictures and they post it. And then I see it on Facebook. That is a nice one, thank you. Because when you get to be my age, there's no nice pictures anymore.
Yes, so beautiful.
Oh, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
The divine beauty.
She's honest now, you see. You get to a certain age where you look in the mirror and it's not to you, it's your mother. Now I look in the mirror, it's not me, it's my grandmother. So, no, it's gone. It's a relief that it's gone, actually. Young women are very interested in their beauty, but it's actually a relief to lose it. It has its downsides. Feminine beauty. Okay. Oh, thank you. Excellent. All right. Thinking, I was just in Dubai and I had two sessions with the teachers, but I didn't teach them this. So this is the four ways in which we transmit. We're transmitting when we're teaching. Transmitting knowledge. Which is like information. And also skills. And values. Many times in teaching, we think that we're just teaching information. And when you're talking about we're not this body, what is that mostly?
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
We think. So if I just have the knowledge that I'm not this body, is that very useful? No. It really isn't. If I can just say, so who are you? I'm not this body. That's not so useful. It's something. It's not useless. It's a starting place. But it's not really what you want. What do you want?
We want values.
Yeah. Values, you could also say, is virtues and character. So where do you really want the I'm not this body to translate to? To what level? To this one, yeah? Now, it also relates to skills. If I really have the character or the values that I'm not this body, then I will behave differently. Am I slow enough? Am I slow enough? Then I will behave differently from someone who believes that they are this body. So, for example, one thing I emphasize in my classes, and I have been bringing up here, is to not think I am so-and-so's wife, I am so-and-so's husband, I am so-and-so's daughter and son, and this and that, but to think simply, I work for Krishna. Can all of you put your phones on vibrate, please, right now? Just take a minute, take out your phone, and put it on vibrate. And if you don't know how to put your phone on vibrate, please ask the person next to you to show you how to do it. Can everybody do that, please? Everybody? Whose phone is this?
It's recording.
Yeah, but you need to also put it on vibrate for sound. Often the phones that are up here recording are the ones that starts ringing. Sometimes my phone starts ringing. Oh, I forgot to put my own phone on. Okay, is everybody's phone on vibrate now? Okay. So it's a skill. I'm not this body is also a skill. How to deal with other people in the mood of I am Krishna's servant. Instead of, I can put it back up here. Instead of in the mood of I am your wife, I am your mother, I am your daughter. It's very different. It's a very different skill. If I'm serving my husband thinking I am a wife, and I am serving my husband thinking I am Krishna's servant, it's very different. My experience is very different. So that is a skill. Now, knowledge you can just teach by saying something and somebody writes it down and then they tell you on a test. That has some value. It's not worthless. But it doesn't have very much value if it stays on that level. All right. Let's look at the four ways we teach. Planned. So the planned curriculum, that's what's in your syllabus. That's what's in Tapasvini syllabus. This is what we say we teach. Now, what you actually teach and what is in the syllabus is never exactly the same. And that's a good thing because we're supposed to adapt the syllabus for the children and the situation that we have. So even if you are teaching the same syllabus for 5 years, every time you will teach it a little differently. But you cannot look at the syllabus and say, this is exactly what we are teaching, because that is never true. Then there's what you actually teach in the classroom explicitly, obviously, openly. Then there was what you teach in a hidden way. So, I actually said that I am pained when people are not treated equally with respect. But suppose I didn't say that. Suppose I just said, oh, we need to make room for the men. They shouldn't. And this gentleman also, he's sitting out in the hallway by the bicycle. I am not happy. I am not happy if I see you're sitting You know, when Prakasananda Sarasvati saw Mahaprabhu, and the ladies could sit here, there's room. When Prakasananda Sarasvati saw that Mahaprabhu was with the shoes, he was going to have. Now let's say I just say, oh, you can sit here. But I don't say why. That is hidden. Or let's say I said nothing. Suppose I did nothing. I simply allowed, we had a sofa here that made a barrier in the room. And the men were outside the barrier next to the shoes and the bicycle. Suppose I had said nothing and I had done nothing. Would I still be teaching something in a hidden way? Yes. What would I be teaching? If they had allowed that situation, suppose I had just been teaching.
Inequality.
Yes. If I had said nothing and I had done nothing and I tolerated the situation, we had a physical barrier and the men were by the shoes, I would be teaching something. Imagine it reversed. Imagine if this was all men and the two ladies were out there. I'm sure we have all been in these situations. I have. That is hidden curriculum. The fact that I am sitting on a couch and you are sitting on the floor is also hidden curriculum. You understand? We're not saying, oh, we think Urmila has something more to say than any of you, or she's higher, or she's... We're not saying that, but we're saying it. All the rules you have in your school about how people are supposed to behave, who can speak, when they can speak, how they can speak, where they can go, that's all hidden curriculum. And hidden curriculum is much more related to skills and values than is the taught curriculum. Just imagine if I had left that sofa up and I had left the men with the shoes and I said to you, it is very important that the students learn to treat everybody equally regardless of the body, because we are all spirit souls. So suppose I said that, but I kept the men with the shoes with the couch. What's louder?
The hidden
is louder. It's much more powerful. Understand? If I am telling my children, you have to be a good son, good daughter, good husband, good wife, good mother, good father, there is a hidden message in there that you are this body. I'm not saying that. And if I said, oh, you're teaching me I have to be a good wife, so you think I'm this body. No, no, no. I never tell people, be a good wife, be a good husband. I say, be a good servant of Krishna. If you're a good servant of Krishna, naturally you will treat your husband nicely. Because Krishna wants you to. Not to please your husband, to please Krishna. You'll be a better wife, actually. But if you're just trying to please your husband, then if he's in a bad mood, you may not be such a good one. Or you're in a bad mood, or whatever. Other things that are in the hidden curriculum, what kind of books you use, what kind of pictures are in the books. This has become very much in the consciousness of modern teachers and modern educators. When I was a little girl in school, all the pictures in the books in America were of children with white skin, and all the names of the children were Anglo-Saxon names. Western, Northern European names. Mostly Western. mostly white, British journal. Now, America is not only white people with Anglo-Saxon names. America is a very ethnically diverse country because we're a country of immigrants. We have very few native people in America. A very small minority of people in America are native to the Americas. Like my family originally came from Russia, my husband's family originally came from Norway. Everyone in America is like this. So one of the educators said, finally, the children are looking in these books, they're only seeing one kind of children. That's sending a hidden message. And the families were all in suburbia. There were no cities, there was no farms. That's a hidden message. So some of you have seen, I hope you understand how I am answering your question. Some of you have seen my Learn to Read books. Have any of you seen those? Have you seen them? Yeah. So I wrote a program, 83 books for children. You've seen? Yeah. To teach how to read English.
Yes.
So I was researching what are the existing systems to teach English to children. And I got all of the top programs from the UK and from America and from Australia and New Zealand. So I noticed something. I noticed two things which were very interesting. One I expected and one I did not expect. So first thing I noticed was, actually it's part of this one too, so I'll go down to this one. The null curriculum is what is missing in your teaching. What is not there? What do you not talk about? Like when I was growing up in school, they never talked about scientific discoveries that contradicted current theories. For example, there are buildings in South America that nobody today knows how to build. Nobody knows the technology. We do not have the technology. We do not have the machines to build those buildings. This is not a secret fact. But I was never taught this in school. I was never taught in school that some ancient society in South America possessed technology and machinery superior to what we have today. That fact was simply not given. Or there are many well-documented cases of people who claim to have connection with non-human entities. Thousands and thousands of well-documented cases from solid citizens claiming to have some interaction with higher non-human entities. Some nice, some not nice. I was never taught this in school. It was not mentioned. Although it's very well documented. There's a lot of documented evidence, and this very much relates to your question, of what we call paranormal phenomena. You all know what this means? When you can, people who know the future, people who can read other people's minds, people who can bend spoons with their mind, that's all called paranormal. So there's been much research in paranormal activities. The Russian government, the former Soviet government, was thoroughly researching this. They wanted to militarize it. Duke University, one of the top universities in America, had a whole department for paranormal research for a very long time. But when I was in school, I never heard about this. Never. Not once ever. And at least in an American government school, very little talk about God. This is the most powerful way of teaching anything. What we call the null curriculum communicates what are the taboos in society. What you don't talk about. It puts things on the margin. if you grow up in a society where nobody talks about alien encounters and nobody talks about paranormal phenomenon and nobody talks about ancient advanced technology, then when you become an adult and you encounter these things, you will think they must be wrong. It must be something crazy because it wasn't part of your education. Is this clear to everybody?
Yes.
This is the most powerful way of teaching this. The most powerful way of teaching values, character, virtues is what you don't talk about, what you pretend doesn't exist. Every culture, every society has things they pretend don't exist. I'll give you a very funny, simple cultural example. In Western countries, we pretend that people don't brush their teeth or pass stool or urine. We pretend nobody does this. We use euphemisms for it. We have it in a separate private room with a locked door. But sexual things are very open. In India, it's reversed. In India, everybody pretends there's no sex.
It's a taboo.
It's a taboo. Yeah. You see, husband and wife are together, they will not touch each other in public at all. Not at all. It doesn't exist. And people are passing stool on the road. You're driving on the road, on one side the men are passing stool, the other side the women are passing stool. At 6 in the morning when I go from Vrindavan to Radhakund. I don't like to go from Vrindavan to Radhakund at 6 in the morning. And for somebody from where they're brushing their teeth in their front yard or on their roof and spitting over the roof.
Yeah.
You know, and for somebody like me from America, I am horrified when I see this. I'm just horrified. You're passing stool on the side of the road. There's a man on this side passing stool and you're on this side. I can't even conceive of this. I just like, it fries all the circuitry in my brain. And I'm sure when people from India go to Western countries and people are hugging and kissing and everything on the trains and the buses and the parks, I'm sure they feel exactly the same way as I feel seeing people passing stool on the road in the middle of the day even. So that is the null curriculum. It communicates the standards and the values of a society. What you pretend doesn't exist. What you don't talk about. What you hide. So I was going back to telling you about these books. So what do you think was absent in these books? All these children's books from all these countries. What was absent? This is a very easy question.
Hidden.
What was absent in the books?
Null.
That null means it's absent.
The reality.
What reality was absent? What was not there?
The diversity.
Not today.
No,
not now. Not
that
this was 2007. That certainly, that philosophy was absent. What else was that? This is a very, very easy question. You don't have to think too hard.
What consciousness?
God. God consciousness. God. Was absent. There was no God. I mean, unless I got books from a Christian company. You know? If there was a Christian publisher, they would have God and Jesus in their books. But otherwise, all of the American books, all the British books, all the Australian books, the New Zealand books, God was not there. Nobody ever prayed. Nobody went to church or a mosque or a temple. Nobody said a blessing over their food. Nobody read a holy book. In all these stories, God was not there. Now, did they say there is no God, there is no religion? Did they say that in these books? Of course not. They wouldn't take it up to here. They had it here. He was just absent. So what are they teaching? You can have a happy, normal life without God. They're also teaching, if you have God in your life, you are strange. This is normal life. Normal life, there's no God. Book after book after book, year after year after year, no God, no prayer. They even had a book about holidays, which were all religious holidays. A Hindu holiday, a Muslim holiday, a Christian holiday. Do you think they used the words Hindu or Muslim or Christian? No. So it was about Christmas, which comes from the word Christ Mass. Was there anything about Jesus? What do you think?
It must have been.
No, it wasn't. Christmas trees and Santa Claus. For Diwali, you think anything about Ram or Damodar? No. We're putting up lights.
But it indicates Ram's...
To you?
The Diwali, the celebration, why we celebrate, there is a meaning.
It was gone.
No, but we do the prayers, everything is there.
Okay, I'm not teaching. Let's go back. Rewind. I looked in the books from American, UK, Australian, New Zealand publishers. In those books, what was missing?
God.
In those books, they showed a Diwali celebration. Was God in the book?
No.
No, not talking about what you're doing.
No, but they did tell that, why are we celebrating?
They did
Diwali?
Not tell.
No, they did not. Many books, it only
not one word.
But Mataji, from beginning childhood, we have been taught like to pray and to believe in God. So
I am looking at books. I have boxes and boxes of books in front of me from the main publishers in those countries, and it wasn't any from India. America, UK, Australia, New Zealand. I'm trying to give you an example so you can understand what this means. In all of those books, there was something about Diwali, but there was no God. That's what the null curriculum means. I want you to understand this concept. I'm not challenging whether or not a book in India talked about Ram. I want you to understand this concept because you are using all of these, my dear friends. You must. I want you to become conscious of how you are using them so you can use them deliberately. If you don't understand what they are, I'm trying to give you this so that you can do this. There are things you are not teaching in your curriculum. I am sure of it. So that's an example of a null curriculum. Something is just missing. Another thing that was missing in those books was large families. All the families in those books had 1, 2, utmost 3 children. Nobody in those books had more than 3 children. Okay, so that was missing. What was also missing were very rich families or very poor families. Are you following what I'm saying?
No.
Are you following?
No.
You're not following. I'm looking at books for children.
Okay.
In those books, to teach how to read, from the big publishers, Macmillan, Quercote Brace Jovanovich, Oxford Reading Tree, Nelson Thorne's, all the big publishers, they're making books to teach children how to read English. In those books, there are stories. The people in those stories never had more than 3 children. They never did anything about God. None of those families were poor. None of them were rich. That is a null and a hidden curriculum. They're teaching in a hidden way.
What is the idea of not mentioning rich and poor?
They're teaching what is normal is middle class and everything else is strange or wrong or bad. I don't think there were many farm families either. I don't remember seeing any farm families. They're trying to communicate a certain idea of what is normal.
But in our India, we see that either they show extremely rich people or extremely low, like that if we see...
Interesting. That is another example of a hidden curriculum. We're not evaluating this, whether it's good or bad. I'm just trying to teach you what these mean. The purpose of these curriculums is to teach this particularly. You can this is taught here. But if you want to teach this, and this is taught with all of these. Skills is taught with all of these. This is almost only taught here. You don't really learn this from here. Practically at all. What we do screams. What we say whispers. What we do and what we don't do. This is what do we do. This is what do we don't do. That is screaming at the children, their values and their character. What we say has almost no effect as far as character. Almost zero. Now, if this all matches, then it has some effect. But it has effect because these are giving it power. If what I do and what I don't do, what pictures I show, what pictures I don't show, what language I use, what language I don't use, what rules do I have, what rules do I not have? If that matches what I say, which often doesn't, then what I say has power because these are the battery behind it. This by itself only teaches this. And some of this. This is skills are coming from all of these together. Values are coming from this. So if you're trying to teach values and you're just looking at the taught curriculum, you will not be successful. You've got to look at these. What am I teaching indirectly? And what am I not teaching? I'll give you another example of hidden and no curriculum in these children's books I was looking at. So in these children's books, do you think people were eating meat?
Yes.
Yes. So in all the children's books, whenever people ate, they were eating meat. So they are teaching it is normal. Now, they never said in the books, eating meat is normal. They didn't say that. But it was all over the books. So I expected that. But there was something very peculiar in these books also. Many of these children's books had stories about animals. And sometimes animals would be trying to kill another animal to eat. So there'd be a tiger trying to kill a rabbit, or a Tyrannosaurus Rex dinosaur trying to kill a Brontosaurus dinosaur. Who do you think won, the predator animal or the prey animal? Prey animal. Every time. Except if the prey was an insect. So if it was a bird eating a bug, the bird would get the bug. A lizard eating the lizard would eat the bug. But if it was a tiger chasing a rabbit, who would win, the tiger or the rabbit?
Rabbit.
Every time. The Tyrannosaurus Rex or the Brontosaurus? the brontosaurus, every time. Is that interesting? But they're doing this way. They're not doing it this way. They have a hidden curriculum that you have sympathy for the prey animals. And you have no sympathy for the predator. And then you can be a predator. You understand? You can be a predator. You can eat meat. You can be the tiger. You can be the Tyrannosaurus Rex. You can be the wolf and eat meat. But in the story, the tiger, the wolf, Tyrannosaurus Rex, they were always hungry. They never got any food. You know how we sometimes preach to people you should be vegetarian because you should care about the animals, and it doesn't always work? Like in their mind, they separate it. I can be kind to animals and I can also eat meat, right? How were they taught that in this way? When they were very, very small children, they're reading these books where the rabbit always gets away from the tiger. And the children sit and eat meat. And so these two things in their mind are separate. Now, if you said that to the children, that would be ridiculous. You're not going to say to the children, all the tigers should die. But you can eat meat. You will not say that to the children, but you will show it to the children. So whenever you're talking about teaching character and virtues, you want to look here. How am I treating the children? How do I have the children treat each other? What kind of language do we use to talk about ourselves? What kind of language do we use to talk about our relationships? What do I not talk about? What do I not teach? What do I not do? And this is the place where you're going to be teaching children, you're not this body. Now, you should teach it here also, of course, but that is not enough. It will never be enough. It is what you're teaching here. So how would you teach here that we're not this body? Well, first of all, do you treat everyone as a soul? What does that mean? What would that mean? You think about this. How would you show in your behavior? Because we have to also have some differentiation according to body. That must also be there. We're not inviting the cats to this meeting. So we are differentiating. You can have your child come to your bed and hug you, but you will not have a mosquito come to your bed and hug you. So we are differentiating according to the body in our behavior. So if this is something for you to meditate on, what does it mean in my life? How am I demonstrating in my life? Many years ago, I met a woman who visited the Boston Temple for the Sunday feast. And she said, I am a disciple of Jesus. And I said, oh, that is very nice. I said, if you did not tell me this, and I looked at your life, how would I know? She said, you wouldn't. My daughter-in-law's parents asked Srila Prabhupada, what is the best way to preach? He said, invite someone to live with you for 3 days and then say, live how I am living. And Prabhupada said, the children should as far as possible do what the elders are doing. But this requires some introspection. How could somebody tell by watching my life? And I'm not talking about that you sit down and chant japa. And I'm not talking about that you do puja. And I'm not talking about that you offer your food. I'm talking about your general behavior with others and with yourself. How do you talk about yourself? How do you talk about others? How do you deal with others? How do you deal with yourself? How do you deal with objects in your environment? What do you do? What examples do you show the children? What stories are you telling the children? What stories are they reading? What kind of rules do you have in the classroom? What are your teaching methods? And what do you not talk about? What's missing? What do you pretend doesn't exist? And only then can you teach this. Actually teach it. You may be able to train people in certain behaviors externally. You know, like my mother would say, when I was 6 years old, when I had my six-year-old birthday, I got, I think, five or six pairs of red tights, like stockings, all same. You know. Maybe they had a sale, I don't know. And so I was started to cry. And my mother took me back in the room, and she said, "You just say thank you." She said, "We can return to the store later. Right now, you just say thank you." So I learned a behavior. I'm still not so good at it, but anyway, I learned a behavior. Sometimes I say, "Oh, thank you." Not always so good, but my mother tried at least. So she taught me a behavior, but that wasn't really teaching me a value. Didn't necessarily change my character. That didn't make me grateful. It just made me learn how to behave in a society. You understand? Like I notice when I'm visiting, the parents, they take their children and they tell them to bow down to me. That's teaching a behavior. It's teaching a skill. But it's not necessarily teaching a value. Could be, but not necessarily. Many of us learn just certain behaviors to get along in our society without actually changing our mentality. So it's important, but it's not enough. So I'm going to have you all do something in a few minutes. But is there something else particularly somebody would like to ask?
Hidden and none. The first thing that struck my mind, like children, is we talk about Dhruva planet and all. They doesn't know that. They know only those 8 or 9 planets. So it is a contradictory for them in their mind. So how we can explain them in a broader way? Like when we say sun god, they only know the sun.
Same thing, Mataji, my daughter was learning science and she said that Darwin. And it's very different to believe this, that what we are learning in Bhagavad Gita and Darwin, that our monkeys and like that. So she said, how to correlate and what I have to write in the exam?
I think all of us have to learn that we write in the exam what the teacher expects us to write in the exam. That is part of the hidden curriculum of a school. Yes? The teacher will never say, write in the exam what I expect you to write, whether it is true or not. They will never say. But you learn that very fast. Yes? By the time you are 7, 8 years old, you know.
What is expected of you?
I have to give the answer the teacher expects, and I have to write on the exam what the teacher expects, whether it is true or not doesn't matter. Yes? We all learn that. I remember when my youngest son started going to university, he was very upset because he had been in Gurukul whole life. I mean, you're calling your once-a-week school. We had full academic school. And we used to encourage the children to find many different ways to solve a mathematics problem. But he said in the university, the teacher wanted to see not only the answer, but You had to do it the way that she taught. You couldn't do it a different way. And he would be so upset because he's very brilliant in math. I said, look, you know, you just have to do it the way the teacher wants. It may be foolish, whatever. So you have to teach your children that. I mean, it's a sad thing. It's a very sad thing, but it is what it is, what it is. What to do. But you're having this problem because in the outside schools, they have a very big null curriculum about God and about the scriptures. That's the problem you're running into. They teach the evidence for evolution, but they don't teach the evidence against evolution. They pretend it doesn't exist. As far as other planets, as I said, there are thousands of people right now on Earth who encounter other beings. Sadaputra wrote a book on this called Alien Identities, bringing up some of the main, very well-established encounters with human-type beings who aren't human. But that's not in the schools. They never bring it up in the schools. Never. So the children naturally think it must be false. Naturally. They think, you know, neo-Darwinian evolution must be true, and other beings from other planets must be false. They don't get any other information. And here we are, this little ISKCON group, and they think the whole world believes like in schools, and we're the only ones who believe what we believe. But that's not the case. First of all, there are many, many, many religious people and many scientists who question some of the evolutionary theories. And after all, it is a theory. No scientist will say it is absolutely a fact. It's a theory. And you can teach your children science is best at something that is in the present time and very close to you. Science is about something you can observe with your senses, and you can do an experiment, and people can repeat the experiment. This is the scientific method. So you teach your children, what is the scientific method? You observe. From your observation, you get a hypothesis. From the hypothesis, you create an experiment, and you test your hypothesis. So that works very well if you can have something that you can touch with your skin and see with your eyes and hear with your ears and taste and smell. It doesn't work very well with something that's very far away that I can't touch. If it's far away in space or it's far away in time, the scientific method becomes less certain. You can use it, but it's not very certain because you can't experiment. How am I going to experiment with the past? Evolutionary theory is about the past. Can I experiment with the past? I can only experiment in the present. I can take what I find, what evidence I find from the past, and I can experiment with it in the present to guess at what happened. I'm going to end in 10 minutes later. To try to understand what happened in the past. I'm leaving in 10 minutes, but if you need to leave now, that's fine.
My doctor.
So you teach them that. There's no way that the scientific method can give you sure information about anything that is very far away in space and time. That's its limitation. Does that make sense to everybody? If you understand science, you'll also understand. I'm a social scientist. So one of the things we have to write always in our research are, what are our limitations? Science is limited for anything that is far away in space and time. It can make a good guess, but it cannot prove it. Nobody can prove how the universe was created. Impossible to prove an event in the past. You cannot do that. How do you prove it? How do you go back in time to see if you were right or wrong? Nobody was taking a video. You know, you can buy a video, educational video, how the universe was created, but who was taking the video? So whenever we are talking about anything far away in space and time, there is a big element of faith and a big element of uncertainty. It doesn't matter what is your theory, it doesn't matter what technique you use, there is some big element of faith and uncertainty. We should tell them there is many, many millions or billions of people on the planet who also question the current scientific theories about things that are far away in space and time. It's not just, you know, a few hundred Hare Krishna people. Many people. And what was the other one? Other beings on other planets. The same. How does modern science know if there's beings on other planets or not? How could they possibly know that? They can't. They can make a guess, but they can't just say that they know. No scientist will say, I know there's life on other planets, or I know there's not life on other planets. They can't know. They can make a good guess. That's all. They can say the planets we have seen have an atmosphere very different from Earth, but there could be life that's very different from Earth life. How do they know? And again, there's so many people who believe that there's life on other planets and there's life beyond the Earth. We are not the only ones. And for that, there's a lot of evidence. Right now, like for evolution, you're looking at all things left from the past. But with encounters with beings on other planets, that is happening right now. There are so many people who have encounters with other beings. Did you know that? Did you know that? Many. There's very reputable Christian organizations that collect angel sightings. People who have encounters with higher benevolent beings. They don't think of them as coming from other planets, but we think of them as coming from other planets. I don't know, they just don't put it in those words. The Christians will not say the angels are beings who live on other planets, but obviously they do. They live in some other realm. And some of these accounts are very well documented with many, many witnesses. I mean, I read of one where a man got in a bad car accident and the police, the fire, there was a lot of people there, 20, 30 people there trying to rescue this man, and they could not get him out of the car. And then one man just appeared there and was able to get him out. And then they looked and he was gone. And they were in some remote area. They weren't like in a city. And people had photographs of the man. Between 20 and 30 witnesses that he had just appeared and then disappeared. It was within the last year. It was a very well documented incident. Many. And then there's many people who claim to have encountered demoniac beings. It's also quite common. And many of these people are very reputable, solid citizens. And Sataputta says, if we don't believe their testimony, then we can't believe any testimony of anybody for anything. Then all human testimony is suspect. If you say, well, we're not going to believe them. So Sataputta encouraged me to get books from about these different things that are not written by devotees. And they can see that there's many, many, many other people, millions at least, of people who are convinced that evolution is not giving the whole answer of creation, and that there are beings on other planets, or paranormal activity. And these are very good ways also to show we're not this body, for example. when I was talking to one man on this point, his wife was becoming a devotee, and he was very skeptical. And I said, how do you explain out-of-body experiences? You all know what out-of-body experiences are? Near-death experiences? And again, this is very well documented. We're not talking about one or two rare cases. Very well documented, and documented by scientists, by doctors. Chaitanya Charan has collected a lot of some of the best examples of these near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. I mean, somebody's in the operating room of the hospital and they die. Their heart stops, their brain stops. And they say, I was floating out of my body, and they'll be at the ceiling. Like maybe on top of that fan there is some sticker, some label. We cannot see it. But if you're at the ceiling, you could see it. So then they come back to their body comes alive, and they say, I saw this on the ceiling. And they look and it's there. That must mean I'm not this body. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of these stories. So I would expose the children to information from non-devotee groups that also support these ideas. Because otherwise it looks to them like we are just some small, strange group. And everybody else believes something else. That is not the case. We are not alone. There's very few things that we believe that we are the only ones who believe. Most of what we believe, there's a lot of other people who believe the same thing. Now, you won't find another group that believes all of exactly the same things, but somebody will believe something. Like yesterday at lunch, I was talking to some devotees about an instruction Srila Prabhupada gave to Jayakataka Swami in a letter. And one of the things the devotees said, oh, that sounds like the mindfulness of the Buddhists. I said, it is. I said, it's not that the Buddhists don't have any truth. So, you know, like the Buddhists have done so much research of the value of meditation to your health, to your mind, to your work. All of that applies also to chanting Hare Krishna. You follow? It's not that only we devotees believe in meditation. So many people believe in meditation. So many people believe in reincarnation. There's so much evidence for reincarnation. Expose them to that. Again, very well documented scientific research into reincarnation. Okay, this is a tiny drop. At least what I would like you to do is I would like you to look at the next lesson you're going to teach and identify the differences here. And really think about, what am I teaching in this way? Gradually work at your becoming conscious of. This is the unconscious stuff. Make it conscious for yourself. Become aware for yourself. Use it purposely. A master teacher purposely uses the unconscious ways of teaching. You should be conscious of them. So many examples. When I was working in a government school, they were teaching this class I saw to the children. So, you know, talking about your body as yourself. how do we talk about the body? How do I talk about your hair? How do I talk about it? I don't, when I'm with devotee kids, I don't think more than 10 minutes go by before I say something that indicates that I know that we're not this body. A lot of it has to do with what we try to use to motivate the children to behave in a certain way. Are you trying to get them to behave in a certain way because they'll please their parents and their teachers, and they'll get a good job, and they'll make a lot of money, and they'll have some happiness in the world? What are you using to motivate them? But why? Really think deeply about why do you behave well, if you behave well, which I'm sure most of you do most of the time.
Inspire us, inspire the children by our own behavior.
What's your motive?
Motivation.
What is your motive? Why do you behave well?
To be a good human being.
Body.
To please Krishna.
Soul. Depends on that. If you're thinking to be a good example of a devotee for preaching, if you're identifying devotee as I have a certain religious designation and I want other people to have my religious designation, that's body. If it's I'm a soul and I want to love God and I want other people to love God so they can be happy, that's soul.
Practically imparting moral values to children.
Why should they be moral?
To be good human beings.
Body. Do you understand? Be introspective. What's driving me? What's driving me? What's pushing me? Whatever is driving you, you will communicate to the children in these ways. You'll not know that you're communicating it to the children, but you will be. If you're trying to be a good human being, a good woman, a good Indian, a good citizen, a good wife, a good mother, a good daughter, you will be communicating that to your children. And all of that is on the bodily part. Now, if I'm trying to please Krishna as a soul, will I look like a good daughter and good mother and good wife and a good... Yes, of course I will. But that won't be what's driving me. Very, very simple. So I'm right now teaching. I'm the teacher. You're the students. That's body. If I'm thinking, I want to be a good teacher. And I do want to be a good teacher. But if I'm thinking I want to be a good teacher because I am a teacher, that's body. If I think I want to be a good teacher because I'm here to serve Krishna, and here are some souls who also want to serve Krishna, and Krishna would like me to value the time. He is time. Here are some souls. They have taken out time from their busy schedule. They want something valuable they can use in Krishna's service. Let me serve them, soul to soul. And let me try to do an expert job to please Krishna. That is very different from, I want to be a good teacher. One is ego. One is service. And I may not say that, but how I deal with people will reflect that. It is time to end. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.